EY.com.
Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So last week, we played recordings of people who were doing their thing when Chris O'Brien was a mere, 7 years old?
Yep. Yeah, about.
And today, you're off on the road again, but you're 200... You're 200 yards from the cell tower.
Yeah, we're lucky. One of the most beautiful overlooks in America with the BBC. Very interesting group of folks. We're having a lively debate about the animal death, unexplained livestock death phenomenon, and the shoot has gone on twice as long as it was supposed to. I guess I must be tweaking them somehow if they want to keep me 4 hours instead of two, but that's okay.
That show business, it never takes the amount of time that you predict.
Yep, isn't that the case?
So last week, amongst all the characters you were listening to on all those clips that we got from Bob Zanotti, who was your favorite?
Well, you know, the whole Mystic Barber scenario to me was quite intriguing. I think they all had some really good entertainment value. I'm not sure what to make of some of the accounts. I think if they had come forward today, they wouldn't have gotten, you know, near the traction that they did back in the day. But I found it fascinating because it really gives us a good sense of kind of the Wild West of ufology in the late 50s, early 60s when I think ufology was in this transitional phase of true believers and contacteeism and people from Mars and Venus. And all of a sudden, it started to take on a little different feel. And I think that those years, especially during the early to mid-60s, really give us, I think, some really good insight into how this whole field and, you know, people's recognition of the phenomenon, how it's developed over time. And there was a sense of innocence and a sense of, you know, the suspension of disbelief back then that, you know, I think is echoed today, but I don't think those stories would have really gained much traction in this day and age.
I was interested in hearing the story that Yona was telling about the early years of the Borderland Sciences Research Associates, strictly because that was an organization that in the 1940s was talking about 4D. Long before we were talking about 4D UFOs, they did it first, and we don't even hear about them anymore.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's the name that just barely kind of rings a bell in my mind. But yeah, some of these early 50s organizations, and there were quite a number of them too, for our listeners to you know, do a little research. I think you'll be amazed at how, you know, this was much more mainstream, I think, back in those years. And you didn't have the real demarcation and the compartmentalization that you have today. I think everything was sort of lumped together. And it was such a new and emerging, you know, proto-science or even a proto-belief system that the things were a lot less nailed down back then. And it just seemed wilder and woolier.
You know, in looking over what we can find online, there is an organization called Borderland Sciences Research Foundation that actually considers itself the descendant of the original Borderland Sciences Research Associates. How about that?
Wow, that's news to me.
It's right here. It claims to have been the organization founded by Mead Lane in 1945 for the purpose of investigating into realms normally beyond the range of basic human perception and physical measurement. Today, Borderland Sciences continues to be the premier information resource for discerning scholars and advanced researchers on the frontiers of science and awareness. I'll tell you, just because of the background of this organization, I think we should get them on.
I think it's a great idea.
I mean, you know, they're going into the normal stuff, free energy, Tesla, radionics, subtle energy, therapeutic light, water research. Fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I buy all this stuff.
Yeah, well, I think a great someone from their organization would make a great guest, I think.
Well, I'm going to write them and see what kind of answers I get. The site is very elementary, you know, really not that much of a site. But I'm going to write them and see if they are interested in possibly coming on the PowerCast and also talking about all the stuff that went on through the years about their research. See where it goes.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. Let's do it.
Fascinating discovery. There's also a ghost hunters organization in Vermont that's indicated the desire to come on the PowerCast and talk about some of their research up there. And I was looking at their site, this particular organization, and they have a fascinating collection of equipment, scientific equipment.
Yeah, I'd be interested to find out more.
Well, it's called the Paranormal Investigators of New England, or PINE, and they've been featured on different TV shows. And so I'm talking with the founders, that's Jeff Stewart and Diane Stewart, and we're going to see what they have to offer, and perhaps they'll be on a future episode of the PowerCast. Now, speaking of the past, you know, when we think about ufology, the UFO field, and how we got to where we are today, we think about some of the early stories, the early reports. Now, of course, we look at, for example, Roswell. But Roswell, we didn't hear about in the early days. You know, we heard, well, rumors of maybe some UFO crashes here and there. But Roswell, the story didn't come out until, what, the late 1970s with Bill Moore,
correct,
with
yeah.
Charles Berlitz, with Stan Friedman. Before then, we never heard of Roswell. It's like full-blown, suddenly we have this mystery, lain dormant for, what, 30 years, suddenly comes to the fore. And there's a reason why I'm going to mention that. But certainly before we even do that, we've done a number of shows on Roswell. Our listeners say, we don't want to do any more shows on Roswell. And we're not going to do a show on Roswell today, by the way. But every time we do a show on Roswell, it's one of our highest rated episodes. What is the fascination about UFO crashes in the 1940s? Because that takes us to our show today.
Yeah, it does. It's going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to receiving the book. I was hoping to get a copy of Scott Ramsey's book before he came on the show, but I think he's going to be able to get us up to speed on almost a 10-year process that he's undergone in writing this book.
Let's backtrack here. What we're talking about here is a book called The Aztec Incident, Recovery at Hart Canyon, and this is not Roswell. This is the Aztec UFO case. And this is the case that has been the poor stepchild to Roswell, because even people who accept Roswell as being something genuine, something real, do not generally accept Aztec, although obviously Stanton Friedman does because he wrote the foreword to the book.
Well, this should be interesting.
Yes, it's unfortunate that we didn't get a copy of the book. It's not a big volume. It's 212 pages. There's a 30-page excerpt online at their site, Aztec, theaztecincident.com, and you get a background of what the book is about. And obviously, this all started with an early UFO book, Behind the Flying Saucers, written in 1950 by a guy named Frank Scully. Now, Frank Scully was a gossip columnist who worked for Variety. So, of course, we have the stench of being a gossip columnist. I don't even think they have gossip columnists anymore.
Yeah, it's called the mainstream media, Gene.
We have that, you know. So today the gossip columnists work for MSNBC, CNN, Fox News, ABC, CBS, NBC. They no longer...
in the White House.
A few of those, too. It started there with Scully's book, and some people said, well, this guy is just a show business writer. Why do you take the guy seriously? Of course, we also elected an actor for president, so, I mean, what's the difference? But...
yeah.
There was a lot of dispute about this subject, but despite that, Scott Ramsey has spent years and incredible amounts of money investigating it. There's also a love story involved because he met his wife, Suzanne, during his investigation. This is a fascinating story, neighbors. I can't say whether we buy it or we disbelieve. Let's take a few seconds to pull this off. If you want to get in touch with us, there are several ways. One is to write us, news@thepowercast.com. Once again, that's news. @thepowercast.com, on Twitter, we are The Powercast, @thepowercast on Twitter, if you want to send us a tweet. the Aztec incident. Coming next, you're in
the Paracast.
If you want to get your website online and you need reliable service, first-class service at the lowest possible price, there's only one place to go. Well, DreamHost has a special promotion with our show where they'll offer you unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, one-click web apps such as WordPress, 24/7 support. You can save over $55. You want to know how? Go to DreamHost.com/radio, DreamHost.com/radio.
Fate Magazine provides true reports of the strange and unknown. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, life after death, and much, much more. To receive your free issue of Fate Magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit their website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
American gardeners and fellow patriots, make the right choice with your money, time, and your family food supply. Choose 100% pure heirloom seeds in the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Why spend more? The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com is only $37.95 and includes 20 varieties of pure, hardy, easy-to-grow heirloom seeds. Yes, only $37.95. That's 70% less than our competitors. You could buy 3 Survival Seed Vaults for less than one of theirs. The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com includes detailed planting and seed saving instructions and ships same day. Plus, all orders over $49 ship free. MyPatriotSupply.com is American owned by patriots like you, passionate about freedom and preparedness. Call now, 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness items when you order at MyPatriotSupply.com. Choose the original. Choose the Survival Seed Vault at MyPatriotSupply.com.
Hi, I'm Mark Craighead, founder of Crossbreed Holsters. I designed our top-selling holster, the Super Tuck Deluxe, to solve the problems of being poked, pinched, and gouged while carrying concealed. The Super Tuck Deluxe is the most comfortable, most concealable holster on the market today. We offer a 2-week free trial and a lifetime warranty.
Visit us at crossbreedholsters.com. Don't forget, crossbreedholsters.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
Hello?
Congratulations.
For what?
For losing all that weight. How'd you do it so fast?
ASAP.
ASAP what? What's that mean?
Are you ready to get as skinny as possible, as soon as possible, as simple as possible, and as sexy as possible?
I'm listening.
Then get with the ASAP program. It's real and it works. No smooth talk, no slick advertising, and no exaggerated claims of success.
I've got to know more.
Welcome to ASAP. As slim as possible. Whether you have 10, 20, or 50 pounds to lose, ASAP is your weight loss answer. ASAP targets the abnormal fat reserves and makes them available to be burned as fuel and contains no caffeine or hormones. Order ASAP at wholesale prices or join the team to share the business with others. Visit GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Lose weight and look great with ASAP, as slim as possible.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
We have Scott and Suzanne Ramsey. They are two of the authors of the book, The Aztec Incident, and they have two other people who work with them, Dr. Frank Thayer, and, of course, our old friend Frank Warren. Scott and Suzanne, welcome to the Paracast.
Well, thanks for having us.
Now, this book has been a long time coming, and I know when people do projects, and it could be a book, it could be a novel, it could be a movie, it could be a website or a software program, it always takes longer than you predict. So one fast question before we go on and frame the history of Aztec, why the long gestation period?
Well, it took over 6 years. A lot of reasons. We kept doing a layout of the book. We'd have a three-ring binder where we would had all the chapters in, and as we learned things, we added things and researched more, then we add that as well. It just seems like every time we got to the point where Suzanne said, okay, it's a wrap, let's really sit down and get the editing done, get the pictures in, we'd get another lead. And so that just delayed it. And actually, as the book was being printed, we have two incredible leads we need to follow up on. But luckily, at this point, we just kind of drawn a line in the sand and said, look, stop, we have to get the book going.
Now, the other thing here, of course, is being taken seriously, because if something is, as they say in the software business, vapor, it's hard for people to take seriously, but you get the book out there. Now, having more information, would you do a second edition? Would you do a book two? What would be the game plan?
I don't know, Gene.
You sound exhausted from this.
25 years on this thing, at some point, I may have to move on. I don't know. Maybe have somebody pick up the ball. It's been a lot of fun. We have no regrets, but we actually thought about doing another book, kind of a spinoff of the Aztec incident. We were talking to the Air Force Archives. There's really nobody that's done a complete book on Operation Paperclip. So we thought maybe, you know, kicking around an idea about doing one of that.
Really good idea.
Tell our listeners who are familiar with the inside baseball, Operation Paperclip, what was that?
Operation Paperclip was right after, well, actually, doing a little research, we found it was actually starting right before the end of World War II, where the United States was in a race with the Soviets to get some of the brightest German scientists that worked in many different fields. Obviously, the most obvious was the rocket program, human medicine, just to name a few. And we were in a race with the Soviets after the war to get them out of Germany and get them over here to help us with our space program. And during the interview with British intelligence or the OSS, if they had an index card with a brief amount of information on the scientist, and if we thought that you were a valuable asset, they'd put a paperclip on your index card and you would leave the room and go down one hall. If we felt that you were a war criminal or you really brought nothing to the party, no paperclip was put on your index card, and you exited through another hallway where you were either executed out in the courtyard or turned over for the Nuremberg trials.
So you definitely wanted to be part
either
of the paperclip.
Really,
you wanted to be paperclipped, otherwise you have a problem.
Yeah, Huntsville, Alabama, Las Cruces, New Mexico, or the gallows at Nuremberg, that was pretty much your choice.
Let's go back to Aztec. Okay. Now, in the case of Roswell, we really didn't hear much about it until the 1970s, when Bill Moore and Stanton Friedman and Charles Burles got involved. Yes, there was that original story about recovering something at Roswell, possibly a flying saucer, but then they denied it, said it was just a balloon, and most people forgot about it. But with Aztec, we heard about the thing early on because Aztec was a key subject of the book Behind the Flying Saucers by Frank Scully, which came out, what, in 1950? And that book sold a lot of copies. It probably sold more copies than most UFO books combined today. Did you have any information about the sales figures?
Yeah, just in the U.S. alone, 64,000 copies plus, according to Henry Hoyt and Company. We know it was printed in India. We know it was printed, some was printed in Hebrew in Israel. We have no total count. There were licensing agreements with Henry Hoyt and Company, even a paperback version of the book. It could be 75,000-80,000 books by the time it's said and done.
Now, I wrote a lot of books about computers and all that stuff, and I made a little bit of money. I think one of my books sold 50 or 60,000 copies. That was in the years I was making real money. But when it comes to UFO books, I mean, you're lucky to sell 2 or 3,000.
I had lunch with Bill Steinman back last June, and halfway through lunch he said, how many books are you actually going to print? This is a print-on-demand book. This is a POD book.
And what this means, ladies and gentlemen, by the way, is that you go to a printer and you can print as little or as many as you need, and the price is a sliding scale. But the equipment is almost like a glorified high-energy, high-resolution copying machine as opposed to a traditional print press.
Yep, exactly. And when I told Bill Steinman, who's the author, co-author of UFO Crash at Aztec that was released in October of 87, 1,000, his eyes about popped out. He said, "Are you crazy?" And I said, "Do you think too many?" He said, "Yeah, I think you're safe at about 500. And he and Wendell Stevens did 1,000. He said, "Boy, when we got out of the project, we had hundreds of books that we sold to George Green, who now distributes the book, and now it's a very good seller because all the renewed interest in Aztec." But we did 1,000. They printed, they do plus or minus 10%. We ended up with 1,100 books, and we're happy to say they're selling very well.
Let's take a look at what happened with the story of Aztec. Now, okay, so Scully's book comes out, and the impression I get here is it wasn't taken so seriously even by people who were really serious UFO researchers. And then, of course, True Magazine, this men's magazine, not men in the sense of like Playboy with pictures of women undraped, but action, adventure, fiction, all sorts of things. They came out and they did what they felt was an exposure of the Aztec case. Why expose it? What did they find that they felt wasn't credible?
Are you talking about the, you were breaking up a little bit, Ken Purdy, or were you talking about J.P.
Okay, True Magazine, J.P. Kahn.
Oh, that was J.P. Kahn, okay. I address that, Suzanne and I go into a lot of detail on that in the book. I think there was some jealousy with Kahn. I think Kahn was trying to finagle the story from Scully, from Silas Newton, from Leo Gabauer, from different angles. And I think when he, you know, he had left the Chronicle but still had a desk there, the San Francisco Chronicle. I think by the time the dust settled and he didn't get the shot of the story that he thought the Chronicle or he himself was going to have, then I think he went negative on Scully.
So your opinion here is that it wasn't the evidence that made him disbelieve, it was the loss of a possible book deal.
Correct.
So a case of professional jealousy.
I think so, yeah. And I came to that conclusion. I flew out to San Francisco and actually met with Bob McClay, his best friend. They worked at the Chronicle together. Bob McClay was in charge of his estate when he died. Bob McClay went over almost every day to the nursing home to see JP. I've got the last photograph in the book of JP.
We'll get into more of JP Kahn and about the early years of the Aztec UFO investigation. You're with Gene and Chris, with Scott and Suzanne Ramsey. You're in
Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Ray Perkins, a reclusive veteran burned out from the Gulf War, lives tortured by relentless, perplexing nightmares. Nightmares of a horrific battle in deep space and of a mysterious woman suffering in agony for her devastated world. A woman not yet born, calling across centuries to him. Then, a coincidence leads him to his destiny, his chance to alter the universe. Attack of the Rockaways. The former fiction editor for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, Robert Simpson, writes, "The soul of the novel Attack of the Rockaways lies in its heart and passion for building a convincing tale of a love that spans a galaxy. A thrilling story. Attack of the Rockaways is available now. Read a sample chapter and get a special discount off of the cover price at our website, rockoids.com. That's rockoids.com. Attack of the Rockaways. A novel in the grand science fiction tradition."
Love gardening but don't love seeing your hard work destroyed by wildlife? Then use the number one most effective deer and rabbit repellent you can buy, PlantSkid. PlantSkid repellent protects gardens, trees, and landscaping by emitting an odor that browsing animals associate with predators. So animals avoid plants before they nibble, not after. PlantSkid is made in the U.S. from non-toxic, 100% organic, environment, and pet-friendly ingredients. Other repellents wash off in the rain, not PlantSkid. It's guaranteed to outlast all other repellents. Plant Skid was the first animal repellent to be OMRI listed organic and now comes in liquid spray, powder concentrate, or easy-to-use granular. Just sprinkle around your garden. For proven protection from deer, rabbits, squirrels, and other small rodents, use Plant Skid. Member tested and recommended by the National Home Gardening Club. Find a dealer near you at PlantSkid.com. That's Plant, SKYDD.com. Ask about our new vole repellent when you call 800-252-6051. That's 800-252-6051. Plant Skid, proven plant protection, guaranteed or your money back.
If you owe the IRS money you can't pay, then listen carefully, because you already know that the problem won't go away by itself. You can get help today from the leading tax expert in the country, Dan Pilla.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. The IRS isn't going to just forget about you. Right now, the IRS is hiring thousands of tax collectors to go after delinquent accounts just like yours. That's why you need to take action today, and I can help. I take a simple but proven approach to solving your tax debt problem. First, I stabilize collections so you don't have to worry about wage and bank levies. Next, I build a detailed plan to get your debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even eliminated. Finally, I work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. So call now for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829.
Dan Pilla will solve your tax problem, guaranteed. He's helped thousands of people, and he can help you too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
And now another CentOS Game Changer with sports broadcaster Aaron Andrews.
I'm here at my favorite car rental in sunny Miami. With me is the manager, Beth. I see your team has a new look for the season.
Yeah, they just got uniforms, and my female employees are especially excited about the great styles. This flat out wasn't an option when men's uniforms were the only choice.
Well, it seems these young ladies are really hustling out here. What made the change for you?
Yeah, well, our playbook hinged on one big detail. Women's workwear by CentOS. These clothes are designed by women for women. When they look good, they're happier, and our guests notice.
Well, judging by their extra effort, this team is going to the next level with CentOS uniforms. Let's go up to the booth for more.
Finally, a line of women's workwear they want to wear. This is one of many expert services CentOS can tackle for your business. Don't settle for less. Call CentOS at 1-800-CINTAS-6 or visit CentOS.com/radio and tell them to bring in the team with the white truck.
Hi, this is Don Ecker, and you are tuned into the Paracast. Let me tell you what, you're going to hear stuff here that you probably won't hear anywhere else. Hear that, George Snorri?
And what that means, by the way, is that we're probably one of the first shows out there to present Scott and Suzanne Ramsey and to talk about their new book, The Aztec Incident Recovery at Hart Canyon. So we have the strange case here of J.P. Kahn from True Magazine. He writes an expose of the Aztec incident, and your position, Scott, is that he didn't do it because he felt the case had no merit. He did it because he lost out on the book deal.
I think so, yeah. In talking to Bob McClay, again, his best friend, and as we're at lunch, he said, when we get back to my house, I'll show you the book cover of J.P. Kahn's book that was coming out to do a rebuttal against Scully. And my mouth just fell open. I said, you got to be kidding me. How do you have the cover? And he said, because I did it for him. And Bob McClay, by the way, was the staff artist at the Chronicle. So we get back to his house, and he pulls out the original artwork and said, here's the cover for the book.
Now, is this book going to be a pro-Aztec book or an anti-Aztec book?
It was going to be, I think, an anti-Scully book. Because we don't have the guts of the book, that all got, unfortunately, that got dumped in the dumpster when J.P. Kahn died. But Bob kept the cover, the painting, because that was his artwork. But I think the book wasn't going to be anti-Aztec, it was going to be anti-Frank Scully.
Okay, so let's look at the specifics here. Now, just to acquaint our listeners with what's going on, in the 50s, Jim Moseley, Saucer News, he ran articles from J.P. Kahn and from Frank Scully about the subject. And certainly I recall Scully's piece, and even though he may have been a gossip columnist or whatever, he was pretty serious and straight ahead. That was my impression of him.
Yeah.
Is it when you become a person who works in the entertainment publications, if you work for Today Entertainment Weekly or People Magazine, suddenly you are less of a journalist as a result?
I think that's how people were framing him.
Okay, but now let's take a look here at the denials and the reasons for the denials. So, therefore, for so many years, nobody paid attention, or very few people paid attention to Aztec. What was their objection?
Well, Scully's book comes out, and then the whole mix-up with Khan. Really, what that evolved into was fraud charges being brought up against Silas Newton and Leo Gebauer for selling, or allegedly selling, a doodlebug machine to Herman Slater of Colorado, claiming it would find oil, gas, gold, and probably get rid of your cold.
Well, they're still doing that, by the way, on TV, but nobody arrests them. But
I know.
The key is here, these are two sources cited by Scully in presenting what he claimed was evidence that the Aztec case took place, and using their supposed fraudulent behavior as evidence to disbelieve them. Is that the case?
What happened with the Aztec case, when charges were brought against Silas Newton and Leo Gebauer, I think the credibility of Scully's story started to unravel.
Okay, so therefore it's like, if they lied here, they lied there. You can't take anything these guys say seriously.
Exactly. And we go into great detail about the trial. The fact that four federal judges wouldn't take the case. They said this is a civil case, not a criminal case. The fact that the person in Colorado that finally listened to Flater, that claimed he had been defrauded, was a justice of the peace. And they went after him on that. So the baby got thrown out with the bathwater in that case. And because of all of a sudden Scully's popularity of the book, it dragged the book right into it.
So in a sense then, this case killed interest in the book, pretty much.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, absolutely. Yep.
Now,
like a guilt by association scenario.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, let's take it to the next step here. Nobody else during this period, from 1948 through the time that people like you and Bill Steinman began to investigate Aztec, nobody came forth to say, hey, maybe there's some worthwhile information to be researched here?
A gentleman out of Florida, Professor Carr, came out briefly and worked with Leo Stringfeld, saying they had new evidence on the Aztec case, but Professor Carr would never name his sources, so the story died pretty quick.
And none of the people that you talked to during your research, they never came forward and said anything?
About
Aztec.
A lot of people that we talked to came forward about it.
But I'm saying before you got involved.
No.
Okay.
No.
All right.
It was like pulling teeth trying to get people to give us information of what happened out there.
Now, Simon's book came out, what, in the 1980s, was it?
October 87. Yeah.
Okay. So this book from Steinman and Wendell Stevens comes out about Aztec. Where did they start with their research? How did they get hooked into this?
Steinman was probably the catalyst. He had read Frank Scully's book and could not understand why, as we were just talking about, the case died so quickly and the interest died over a simple civil case of two business people having a dispute with a third business person, that being Silas Newton and Gebauer, and their dispute with Herman Flater. The part of the story we never hear about was the fact that Herman Flater had taken Silas Newton and Leo Gebauer for $250,000. But you don't hear that side of the story. You had to go through the court records to hear that part. So here they have a claim for $55,000 that Flater does against these two for a doodlebug machine. And Newton says, hey, I loaned him $256,000 to be exact on his invention of a health machine, and we're going to market the two of them jointly. You only hear one side of that story.
All right. Now, having gone through that, how did you people go back to the sources and see what might have really happened in Aztec? Where's the beginning of this adventure?
Mine was hearing about it on a business trip about the same time Steinman's book was coming out, ironically. not knowing anything about. I didn't even know anything about Steinman's book for years.
Did you have an interest in UFOs at that time?
I've always had an interest. Yeah, I have. And when I heard some people talking about going hunting out on Hart Canyon Road near an old crash site, my ears perked up, not thinking it was a flying saucer crash site, more of a fighter plane or just an airplane. And I asked them more details, and they said, oh, it's an old, you know, town story about an old flying saucer either landed or crashed out on Hart Canyon Road. And having an airline ticket that had me there over the weekend, I had all day Saturday and Sunday and a rental car at my disposal, so I went out and tried to find this alleged crash site. And I just little bits and pieces I picked up a lot of things that were negative, saying it never happened, but I kept picking up equal amount of bits and pieces from the locals that said, well, you know, yeah, we think it did happen. And go talk to so-and-so and go talk to so-and-so. You know, finally I'm bouncing around like a pinball talking to various people, and this took a period of years. I'd go out there about every 6 weeks. The customer at the time turned into being a very good customer of mine, and so that put me out there about every 6-7 weeks.
Just a quick question here. What kind of business are you in?
I have been in for 30 years the electrical application of manufacturing magnet wire. Magnet wire is copper, aluminum, could be other specialty alloys, but it's to be very basic, when you look at the windings of an electric motor or a generator or a transformer, the copper or aluminum winding wire, that's what we manufacture here in Charlotte.
I'll tell you, there's a great need for that. Let's take a few seconds to pull this off. If you want to get in touch with us, there are several ways. One is to write us, news@thepowercast.com. Once again, that's news@thepowercast.com. On Twitter, we are The Powercast, @ThePowercast on Twitter. If you want to send us a tweet or check our forums, forum.thepowercast.com, forum.thepowercast.com. We have Scott and Suzanne Ramsey. We're talking about Aztec. You're on with Gene and with Chris. You're in
The Powercast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Powercast things that you can buy. We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items, and entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Powercast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Powercast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.thepowercast.com, store.thepowercast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Powercast. You go to store.thepowercast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
For a long time, you've heard me talk about building your own food supply with eFoods Direct. As a listener, you know why you need to have a supply of the best storable food on the planet. Every day, we document the attempts to take control of our lives. But there's one thing we can all control, your greatest dependency, food. eFoods Direct products are made with only the best ingredients and none of the trash and contaminants like trans fats, GMOs, or MSG. This food is nutrient dense and tastes great. It's simple to make, portable, and has a shelf life of up to 25 years. Now with eFoods Direct, you'll get the most affordable, best tasting food you can buy. And the new products and pricing will blow you away. Compared to other food sources, including home cooked meals, you can cut your food cost in half. You just can't afford to ignore this. Call 800-409-5633. Or go to eFoodsDirect.com/Alex for specials. Don't let this offer pass you by. Call 800-409-5633 or eFoodsDirect.com/Alex. More of the best for less guarantee.
Don't answer!
answer it. How can I stop these annoying collection calls?
Imagine being free from your debt without settling and with no payment plan, no negotiating or filing bankruptcy, and no attorneys. What if you could eliminate the risk from all your unsecured debt in about 90 days and keep all your money? You can. It's called Zero Debt Guarantee, and it works. There's no other program of its kind on the planet, and we guarantee the results in writing. Call now, 800-477-9256. Let our team of experts provide you with the resources to fight back, stop collection calls, and prevent and stop wage garnishments and bank levies. If you're facing foreclosure, we can help. Don't go it alone. Get free information now by calling 800-477-9256. Talk to an expert who has also completed our program. Call 800-477-9256 for free info or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com. That's 800-477-9256 or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com.
Would it save you time to get the best quality water filters and the best quality storable foods from one company? You bet it would, and now you can at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. Big Berkey water filter products and great tasting, long lasting, storable, wise foods are both now available on one website, BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. Wise foods, ready to eat meals, are packed in airtight nitrogen pouches and come with a 25 year shelf life. Big Berkey water filters are powerful enough to purify treated, untreated, or even stagnant pond water. Combine Berkey water filters with Wise foods for an unbeatable preparedness combination. Get free shipping on every order over $50. And GCN listeners receive 5% off all ceramic filter systems. Visit Big, B-E-R-K-E-Y, waterfilters.com. Or call 877-99-BERKEY. That's 877-99-B-E-R-K-E-Y. Or go to BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com.
Hi, this is Nick Pope. You're listening to the Paracast.
With Gene Steinberg and Chris O'Brien, we have Suzanne and Scott Ramsey. Now, Scott, let's just cover this very briefly. During your voyages to Aztec to explore what was going on, you met your future wife. It's almost a love story.
Yes, I met Suzanne as part of my research. I met her at a fundraiser in Aztec. She was covering the fundraiser for the Aztec UFO Symposium, and she was always very good. She had a radio show like you have. She was very good about having the speakers of the symposium on the show either Wednesday or Thursday before the symposium started, and that's how I met her. We became very good friends, and eventually she had me on her show talking about the research on Aztec. And that led to she and I getting married.
And here you are.
And here we are. Moved her from the lovely town of Aztec, New Mexico, or actually Farmington, to Mooresville, North Carolina.
Okay, now in beginning your research into Aztec, how did you begin to assemble the evidence? Did you use the Steinman book as a guidepost as to where to begin what?
Not really. I just kept really accurate notes. I was just trying to piece it together because I knew so little about it. I didn't know Frank Scully's book existed. I didn't know that Bill Steinman had come out with a book. Kind of just bounced from person to person out there. Eventually, I went down to the Air Force archives at Montgomery, Alabama, Maxwell Air Force Base. And the first time I went there for 3 days, the second trip I got in Sunday night into Montgomery, and I ended up researching Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and left Friday night and drove a partial way back. I had a whole week there just looking for aircraft accident reports or incident reports, big difference, looking for anything that could be confused with this story of a flying saucer on a mesa out in Hart Canyon. And, of course, I didn't find anything. I was actually looking for a flying wing, one of the old B-47 flying wings.
You were thinking about something like a test of some new aircraft.
Yeah, looking for a limited prototype bomber that would have crashed. It was pretty exotic looking. Could the farmers and ranchers and oil field workers confuse that with, you know, something, a lenticular craft as it was described? And the only thing I found in the 70s, east of the crash site, an F-4 Phantom crashed like 73, 74, but nothing that would take us back to 48, 49, 50 era.
Okay. let's look at the case. Let's look at the basic story, and then we'll get into more of the evidence. Okay, when did it happen, exactly what day, and do you have any background information about weather conditions at the time?
Not pinpoint weather. I know what the weather was like in Aztec, and I know what the weather was like in Farmington, but I've left the hotel in Aztec and gone 11.7 miles to the crash site, and it's completely different weather. I've actually left downtown Aztec at with blue sky above me and got to the crash site, and I had snow flurries. But the date that seems to be consistent with everybody that we talked to was March 25th, 1948, just after or just before 5 o'clock in the morning.
Okay, so you're not sure about the weather at that point?
We don't know what the weather was like at the crash site. A lot of the old-timers I interviewed, they just couldn't remember. But I can take the Aztec newspaper that came out a day later that recapped the weather that week, and it was chilly in Aztec, but you know, wasn't up to their ankles in snow or anything like that in downtown Aztec.
Okay, now this specific location, this location where it happened, this Hart Canyon, how far is that from a military base? Were there any military bases nearby?
No, you'd be 60 miles as the crow flies from Los Alamos National Lab, 127 miles as the crow flies from Kirkland Air Force Base and Sandia National Labs, 240 miles north of White Sands Missile Range. So there's nothing immediately nearby. The Alvado radar station, 80, 90 miles as the crow flies over at Alvado Lake. But, no, there's nothing right there.
The other question, of course, with regard to any possible test aircraft, any Cold War training operations, missile tests, rocket tests in the vicinity?
Oh, yeah, they were going on all the time, but I could not find any record of anything on that date in that location.
Okay.
And it's a little too far for a V-2 to stray. I mean, that's you're pushing it with a V-2. You're not going to get one that far.
And if it was a V-2, certainly you'd recognize it.
Yes.
Okay.
And it wouldn't, they, I don't think they put a security lid around it like what went on at that that mesa that day. And Hart Canyon, you leave the town of Aztec and go north just a little bit like you're going to Cedar Hill or Durango, and Hart Canyon veers off to the right going east, and it's out there on a mesa on the north edge of the Hart Canyon Road is where this object was found.
Now, that's the point. Nobody actually saw something in the sky. There was no UFO sighting preceding this apparent crash.
Oh, no, there was. Yeah, Valentine Archuleta that morning actually called the Air Force, which is probably how the Kirkland Air Force Base was alerted that something happened.
Okay, is this one of the cases that we actually find in the Project Blue Book reports?
I don't think so, but it's one you find in Steinman's book, and Valentine's dead, but I have talked to his family.
Okay, so is there records of this case in the family records, something he wrote down or something like that?
Yeah, it's too long and involved, but basically he came out about 4:45 that morning to, he was a rancher and ran an orchard, actually a very successful little ranch, and came out to check on his goats and sheep. And saw a huge UFO, in his words, fluttering like a leaf and fluttering as though it was in trouble and heading northeast. And the Valentine Archuleta Ranch would be just almost due south of the mesa in Hart Canyon Road. And he quickly went in and called Kirkland Air Force Base and said, hey, one of your crazy flying saucers you guys are talking about, I think it's in trouble. And it actually, he claimed, bounced off the canyon behind his house, behind his ranch. And the Air Force, it took two or three phone calls to get through to Kirkland. I don't have my notes in front of me. And they thanked him and said they assured him that they would call him back, but wanted detailed information where he thought this object was heading. So that's possibly how the Air Force was alerted or the military was alerted as to which direction this object was going.
Okay. Was any evidence recovered of something crashing near his home, at least some kind of impact?
No.
Okay.
No. He said it hit and he saw sparks fly and off it went over over that mesa and heading out toward Hart Canyon.
Okay, just parenthetically, you'd think if it struck the canyon at that particular point, wouldn't there be some evidence that something metallic struck there?
You would think.
Okay.
Well, you know, were you a fan of Formula One back in the 80s and 90s? I'm going to give you a good example. They used to have titanium, or sometimes until they outlawed beryllium, stop blocks on the cars so the cars wouldn't bottom out and hit the carbon fiber chassis on the belly. And they would run titanium, and every time they got on the brakes and the car would dip, you'd see a big shower of sparks. And after the race, after 200 miles or 100 miles, whatever a Formula One race is, 1 to 2 thousandths would be worn off. Yet you'd get these incredible sparks.
So even though there were sparks, and probably we didn't have the scientific measuring equipment today, you wouldn't find any evidence of anything.
Right. And not all metals, when they give off a spark, necessarily leave a trace.
Now, the craft that this person saw, any more details?
Oh, yeah. From Valentine Archuleta or from the workers that came over?
Well, let's go into the person who saw it flying.
Okay. Valentine Archuleta, no, he saw it as it came across his ranch, fluttering like a leaf. It careened off his back canyon.
Right, but what did he see? How big was it? Did it make any noises? What?
He was interviewed pretty late in life, and he was pretty old. He said it was huge. It was thin, like a pancake, and had some searchlights on the bottom, some types of lighting on the bottom, and that was about it for his description.
Okay, something he's remembering that took place 60, 70 years earlier. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Similar to the remembrances we have of Roswell, for example. So the next stage in our story, of course, is where people come upon the wreckage. And the other question I guess I'll ask as we move to our next segment is, did the Air Force Base call this guy back and say, hey, here's a follow-up, or did they just write it down and ignore him? That's one of the things we're going to find out. We have Scott Ramsey with Suzanne Ramsey. We're talking about the Aztec case. You're with Gene and with Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.